Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Radio here on RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula. You're with your hosts, as usual, myself, Joe Novella, and my co-host, Steve Pallas. How are you this morning, Steve?
Joey, I am very well after a very big week. Thank you very much. I'm very well and glad to be here.
Oh, great. Now, for you guys out there, if you want to get involved in the show, feel free at any point to email us at jointheshow@sportscommunity.com.au, and we'll definitely talk about your feedback on the show. If you've got anything that you'd want to talk about in terms of grassroots sports, more than welcome to drop us a line. Now, Steve, we've had quite a big reaction to the last couple of shows, and mostly because we've been able to use technology to podcast the shows that we've made here on RPPFM. And it might be an opportune time to talk about technology in grassroots sports, because it could help the grassroots sports clubs out there if they're thinking about extending the reach of their communications. Podcasting might be an option for them.
Yeah, I definitely, Joe. And I think before we start using too much lingo, do you want to just let the listeners and myself know what is podcasting?
Well, essentially, all it means is you broadcasting digital content from your website. And that's what we've been able to do at our website, sportscommunity.com.au, and we use a certain tool, but there's hundreds of different tools out there that you could possibly use in clubland, and most of them are free. You could even do something as simple as talking to your iPhone or your or Android phone, record that, transfer it to your computer, and then broadcast that from your internet site, which is effectively podcasting.
Yeah, and that creates some real personal interaction between the club and its listeners. And just looking at our podcast figures, Joe, and the thing that's amazed me is not so much, well, the figures have been quite very strong for our first couple of shows, but where they are, we've had listeners all over the world, and that's going to be the case with clubs as well. So it's a fantastic way of connecting. So one that clubs really should consider as a really easy way of getting news out quickly, and you can also then use it as content in your social media and potentially in your newsletters as well. So you can kill a couple of birds with one stone. So we've been working through that, getting our podcasting up in the last couple of weeks, and we've still got a bit to go, getting it onto iTunes, Joe, and a couple of other platforms that we'll be able to use to broadcast the show. But certainly something for clubs to consider. Joe, just moving off the podcast a little bit, and one of the most popular sections of our website, and when we do training sessions, one of the key things that people want to know is about grants. So we thought that every week we might have a section or a session in the show about what are the upcoming grants, when are they closed, what are grants for, and those sorts of things. So we're really excited to be able to bring that to you on a weekly basis. But I guess in preparation for that that discussion, it's probably worthwhile having a discussion, Joe, about what grants are, how clubs can successfully apply for them, and some of the tricks of the trade to applying for grants, because for some clubs it's very intimidating applying for grants. So that's what we'll spend the next, well, maybe 5-10 minutes just talking about grants and how your club can increase its probability of being successful, because there are a lot of easy things for clubs to do.
So why don't we start, mate, by just telling the listeners out there what a grant is in its simplest form?
Oh, absolutely. Now, a grant is an amount of money offered by one organisation to another for that organisation to fulfil a specific purpose. Now, often the grants will come from local government, they'll come from state government, they'll come from federal government, but there's also philanthropic trusts and there's also corporate grants. So, for instance, in the last... Oh, currently on the website at the moment, we've got Commonwealth Bank Australia. We've got some cricket grants open, and Sports Cover have got some grants open, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But the key thing there is, Joe, making sure that you you, when you apply for each, whatever grant you're applying for, that you applying for that specific purpose. Like, it is just so important that you make your grant application match the purpose by which the organisation wants to give the money out.
Now, one of the things that we get the feedback that we get regularly when we go out and visit clubs is that I didn't know about that grant, or I didn't know that that exists. I didn't know that we could get money. And the case is that there is a lot of money, significant amount of money out there that has been put aside by those various organisations that you've talked about to assist grassroots clubs in growing and getting kids into sport. So the trick for clubs is to be aware of this and to know where to find those grants. So, mate, where is the easiest place to find the grants?
Well, one of the challenges is of four club volunteers is to find the grants, and we ourselves have an amazing amount of spend an amazing amount of time identifying where the grants are. We look at over 80 different locations every week to find the grants. And we put them in a central location on the Sports Community website, so www.sportscommunity, and then click on the Grants tab, and that'll take you through to probably about 80 or 90 different grants that are open at any one stage, or 50 to 90 grants depending on the time of the year.
And what type of dollars are we talking? We're talking 20, 50, 100?
Yeah, well, there's all sorts of different grants, Joe. Like, there's grants for club development and participation, as you mentioned, travel, uniforms, which are, you know, most council organisations will have grants kind of that will help with all those things, up to $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, and lots of other different organisations. But once you start getting into the larger grants, the facility grants, when you want to have major and minor facility improvements, well, we're looking at potentially the size of the grant can be in the millions. And that's an art in itself. And when we're talking about facility grants, we're very pleased that we're going to have one of the best facility grant accumulators in the country, Ben Bainbridge from the City of Yarra Rangers Council, come in a couple of weeks and tell us really about how he and his clubs go about attracting such fantastic dollars for their major facility grants, because they're one of the most successful councils in the country. But at the more lower levels, we're talking of anywhere upwards of $500 to $5,000 can be easily attained with good grant applications.
Right. So the normal response to this when we tell people is, you know, there's a glint in the eye and everyone gets really excited and says, "Wow, we're going to go out there and we're going to grab all this money and we're going to solve the club's problems in terms of uniforms and paying coaches and all of that kind of stuff." But the reality is quite different, in that you really have to plan, and you need to. There's some must do's, and there's some definite no-nos when it comes to grants. So I wonder if we can begin to share some of those. At least let's start with the must-dos. You mentioned at the top of this segment about specificity, for lack of a better word, in that clubs need to be specific. What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, if the grant that you're applying for is for facility improvement, for instance, then it's no use applying to get laptops, because it's going to be unlikely to fulfill the need of what the grant application is. Or if it's for increasing participation, then it's going to be very difficult to request uniforms, for instance. So you've got to actually target the grant to what the organisation that's giving the money wants to give the money for. That's the primary reason that grants get disregarded, is that they don't actually meet the purpose of the grant.
So for a bit of inside knowledge for everyone out there who's listening to the Sports Community Radio, we do a lot of work with government organisations and custodians of grants.
Yes.
So these are the people that make the yes no decision on whether clubs get a grant or not.
Yes.
And the first criteria is that particular criteria. The people that we talk to say that as soon as they see a grant application that does not address the grant itself, so you're not being specific, that's the first reason to get rid of it.
Well, that's the only reason, because it goes in the bin.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very, very rare organisation, particularly if you're going...
Well, it's not the only reason to get rid of it, but if you've addressed that, at least you go to the next phase.
No, but what I was going to say, Joe, is that particularly if your grants are oversubscribed, which means that they have more applications than money available, then if they'll look at them, and if your grant doesn't meet the specific purpose, then they'll immediately disregard it. It doesn't matter how good the purpose is and what you want and how genuine. They will immediately disregard it.
And this is a common problem out there when clubs are applying for grants, is that they see the money and they think, well, we're going to apply for this anyway because we need this money.
Mm.
And even though the motivation is right,
mm.
it's never going to get you anywhere.
No, and look, there's two things that we strongly, strongly recommend when you're thinking about applying for a grant. The very first thing that you should do, you know, clearly define what you think your grant application is and what the purpose that you want the money for, and does it satisfy the need. But the very, very first thing after that is to ring up the grant provider and start to build a relationship. Now, typically what we do is we ask questions, you know, we tell them what we want to use the grant for and ask, does this meet the need? And that does two things, Joe. It makes sure that you get your grant pitch right, but most importantly, what it does do is it starts for you to build a relationship with one of the key decision makers about who allocates the grants. So effectively that telephone call is actually you're selling your club. That's where you sell the club. That's where you get them to believe in you, your ability to make a difference, and get that emotional buy-in. Because if you think of that person, inevitably is going to go to a committee that makes a decision. They may be the primary person, or they may make recommendations. But if they've had you on the end of the phone making your passionate pitch to them about why you need the money, why you want the money, how much of a big difference that's going to make, well, that's going to separate you automatically between yourself and every other club that didn't take the time to make that pitch. So the very first thing we would recommend, even if you can't think of a reason to give them a call, just give them a call and build that relationship and make your sale. Because the way that the grants are selected is that is committees of people will make a decision, and the people are going to argue for the ones they know the best, because it's very difficult to get the passion off a written piece of paper or a computer screen. And the other tip that is really, really, really important is just about every single grant will require accompanying information. And so typically what we do as grant writers is we start at the start and we work our way down to the last question. And then the last question is, and also you've got to provide financials and you've got to provide two quotes and you've got to, but inevitably we're doing the grant application the night before it's due. And we've got no way of pulling together all that information. So what I would say is my two big recommendations before you even start to write the grant application is talk to the person that's offering the grant and look at everything that they need and work backwards from what they need. Because the City of Kingston, they often require, as an example which we're using the presentations, they require full club financials, the ability to contribute money, two quotes, a description of the services of different people that are going to contribute. So they actually require quite a lot of information to accompany the grant application. So quite challenging, that is, if you've left that to the last minute, Joe.
Mm. Now, we do know that there's professional grant writers out there, well, grant appliers. A lot of different organisations do employ professionals who spend their whole life applying for grants on behalf of different organisations. That's definitely one way that clubs could consider, but you'd have to weigh up the return on investment, because, of course, you'd be paying these people. The other avenue, as you suggested, is to establish a relationship with the grant provider, and to be organised in terms of your accompanying documentation.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that accompanies every grant request or offer is a guideline for grants. So that's where you start. The guidelines tell you exactly what you need to do, how you need to answer. So a lot of people feel the need, they're intimidated by grants, But you don't need to be, because it is very, very simple information that if you just take the time to work through the guidelines, understand the guidelines. If you don't understand the guidelines, there's another great reason to come back and ring the grant provider. That's what they're there for. They want to get the best possible outcome for their money. So they're more than happy to talk to you two or three times, build a relationship with them. You know, don't go overboard with that. Make sure it's genuine information that you require. But follow those guidelines. They'll tell you exactly what they're trying to achieve, what format everything's got to be in, and it actually makes it quite simple. So there's no reason that clubs couldn't undertake all their grant writing applications, and there's no reason why someone who has never done it before can't do it very, very successfully.
Okay, so we talked a lot about some tips that must-dos that clubs should do should perform when applying for grants, and by extension, that means that the opposite is not what you should do. So if you're not being specific, if you're being all over the shop and you really want to buy a computer when you're applying for a facilities grant, well, you're going to be in trouble. And if your accompanying documentation is all over the shop, then you're going to be in trouble as well. And if you've got no relationship with the grant provider, then you're probably going to be at the bottom of the queue or thereabouts. Is there any other glaring mistakes that clubs make when it comes to applying for grants?
Yeah, there is, Joe. And just before we go into just a whole range of grants that are open this week for clubs to apply all around the country, probably the last thing that we just want to make clubs aware of is that even the best grant applications are going to be unsuccessful at some stage. Some grants are so oversubscribed that it's most likely, no matter how good your grant is, that you're going to be unsuccessful. Most clubs, even with the best grant writers, are only getting 2 out of 4 applications successful. So if you are unsuccessful in your first couple of grant applications, there's nothing wrong with seeking feedback from the grant provider, but don't get discouraged. But the one thing we do say, be specific. If you can't achieve the specific needs of the grant, don't apply for it, because you won't get it. But on the other side of the coin, if you can, then have a crack at it, build a relationship and go from there.
I guess that's a really key point for everyone out in clubland, is that there's no smoke and mirrors when it comes to grant. We've actually met the people who make the decisions to give a grant or not give a grant. And they're just normal people who have got the motivation to help clubs. And they suggest that you call them. They're there to be talked to. So, you know, if we can give you any advice, it is to establish, even if you miss out, talk to them. Ask them why you missed out. Learn how you're going to do it better next time. Establish that relationship. So, you know, they act as a mentor or a coach for you, and you are more likely to get successful grant applications through, you know, the second time. Okay, you're with Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas here on Sports Community Radio on RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. We'll have plenty more for you after the break when we come back from the station sponsor messages.
The all-new Atrium Restaurant not only has new owners, it also boasts many new facilities with something for all the family. There's the stunning Atrium Restaurant, a massive kids' play area, a burger sports bar with Foxtel, and free function room hire.
Try one of their weekly specials, like Thursday's Mega Parma Night, $12.99, Wednesday's Steak Night, $19.99, or Monday's Kids Eat Free Night.
The new Atrium Restaurant, 10 Country Club Drive, Safety Beach. Bookings call 59818123. A station sponsor.
More and more people with a taste for quality are shopping at Eliza Meats. Kevin and his lean team pride themselves on the finest cuts, from juicy steaks and roasts to high-grade mince and sausages. And Eliza Meats are the gourmet specialists. Inquire about Eliza Meats Spit Hire. Phone 9787 4473 for a mouth-watering meal fit for a king. It's all at Eliza Meats. See our sponsor Kevin at Eliza Meats, 112B Mount Eliza Way, a station sponsor.
Are you a business owner looking to cut costs in your business? Tough, isn't it?
Let Bartercard show you a different way to increase your sales, cash flow and business profits. Don't wait. Increase your cash flow today. Boost your business with Bartercard. To find out how Bartercard can increase cash flow to your business, call 1300-BARTER. That's 1300-BARTER.
If you live in Rye, Blair Gowrie, Portsea, St Andrews Beach or Sorrento, contact South East Water today about connecting early to the new sewerage system. With Peninsula Eco Early Connection option, you could pay to connect to the new sewerage system up to 16 years ahead of schedule. For more information on early connection, contact our team today. Phone 1800 720 613 or visit the South East Water website. Peninsula Eco. Connect early.
This is Sally from Sweet Pea Cuisine. At Sweet Pea Cuisine, we specialise in sharing knowledge, passion and enjoyment around food. We run cooking classes for kids, teens and adults, present food events and cooking demonstrations, create recipes to highlight your product and style food for the camera. Join me every Tuesday morning on the breakfast program when I chat about all things food on the peninsula. To find out more, visit me at www.sweetpeacuisine.com.au and like my Facebook page, Sweet Pea Cuisine. Stay sweet with Sweet Pea Cuisine, a station sponsor.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Sorensen here to talk about your skin. It's the largest organ in the body and often the least cared for. With skin being such an important part of your body, why trust it with anyone else but an experienced, university-educated dermal clinician? Like the team at Dermal Aesthetics Specialist Skin and Laser Clinic. With highly educated clinicians, the latest treatments and products, they do things differently at Dermal Aesthetics, and it shows. Visit dalaserclinic.com.au. That's dalaserclinic.com.au.
Welcome back to RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula. You're with Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas here on Sports Community Radio. We have our special guest with us today. Her name is Laura Mullins. She's the Marketing Coordinator of Choice Hotels Australasia. Welcome to the program, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, Laura, it's an absolute pleasure. Sports Community and Choice Hotels have been proud to announce a partnership during the week to promote the Sports Choice Choice Sports Awards, which we think is a fantastic initiative by Choice Hotels for the clubs. But do you want to tell us a little bit about the program and how it works for grassroots sports clubs, Laura?
Yeah, definitely. So Choice Sports was developed in order for Choice Hotels to give back to grassroots sporting clubs. Once you become a part of the Choice Sports Travel Program, we offer 15% off the best available rate on our accommodation and a 7% commission on every booking made back to the club. So clubs essentially get access to discount accommodation and then a rebate through their Choice Sports membership.
And just to expand a little bit, it's really 15% for anyone that uses anyone related that uses the club code, isn't it? So clubs will register with Choice Sports and then receive a code?
That will enable them to use that ID online to book accommodation or over the phone at our sport desk through our reservations department.
And fantastic. And so, and it doesn't necessarily need to just be the players and members of that club. It can be really anybody associated to that club can use
correct.
The code.
So once the club has that code, where we like to work with the club on getting it out to as many people as possible through all avenues that the club has access. So online, through social media, mail outs, newsletters, anything that the club has access to, we're completely for getting out that code, because the more people that book through Choice, the more commission the club can earn.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we talk to clubs, it's one of the keys about these sort of programs is it's you don't just sign up and then announce the code once and sit and forget. Clubs have got to be continually reminding members and their supporters about the existence of the offer and the code, because it might be 12 months before they need to use it. So
that's exactly right. Yeah. So it's not necessarily just for clubs who only travel. Any club who has a fan base and who has members and associates, of course, most of us all travel, so it's about getting it out there to those people. So we offer a range of different support systems, and one of which has been our business cards, which have taken off quite a bit.
So how does that work?
Yeah, so Little Athletics and all their state bodies have all now had business cards produced. So they hand that out to all their members in promotional packs and show bags that they have for their members. And then they also give that away to all their associates and anyone else they come into contact with to help promote and push people to receive that 15% off and help the club in return.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be club-related travel. It can be any travel that that supporter or that member of the club undertakes. So it's perfect for clubs like Bowls Clubs, whose membership often hit the road during the winter months and travel around Australia in the Grey Army kind of caravan that goes around the highways.
That's right. So we have 260 hotels across Australia and New Zealand, and they represent Econolodge, Comfort, Quality, the Clarion brand, and the Ascend collection. So that's also available across the USA and Canada as well, which we have over 6,300 hotels across the world.
Wow. And
this can be used. So
as a fundraiser for a club, it's a really fantastic fundraiser if the club does continually remind members of the opportunity of the Choice Hotels program and the rebates. And apart from the business cards, what other ways do you have to support the clubs to getting that message out?
Yeah, so, I mean, we would like to work with the clubs in the best way they see fit. So if that means website, collateral, newsletters, posters, we're happy to help produce and distribute that to their stakeholders and their members. And I mean, really, we work with the club on the best ways they see fit for their members.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have over 130 sporting clubs now that have signed up since the launch of Choice Sports last June.
Wow.
And you'd be surprised at the smallest clubs sometimes have the biggest fan base and members that they can get it out to. So we've had everyone sign up from darts, calisthenics, cricket, football, baseball, basketball, Little Athletics, tennis, swimming, karate, dragon boating, bowls. The PGA professionals are now signing up as well because they're on the road constantly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Archery, hockey, ice hockey, kickboxing, table tennis, polo, soccer, badminton, surf lifesaving, netball, gridiron, you name it. We want everybody to get on board and all sporting clubs to benefit because the whole point of the program is to help these sporting clubs earn a rebate.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we talk about a lot at Sports Community is the diversity of fundraising ideas that clubs now have access to as opposed to the traditional sausage sizzle or chocolate drive. And this is a really fantastic one because just by using the club communication like that they've got already, the websites and the email newsletters and social media, just continually reinforcing to their members, they can earn really good amounts of money just by, you know, by promoting it. So not doing a lot of their own physical work like standing over a sausage sizzle, cooking
That's
sausages.
Right.
Yeah, it's a fantastic program. Why did Choice come up with the program? Like, there's lots of different ways of supporting grassroots, and yet you've come up with this model, which we think is fantastic. But what was some of the thinking behind that?
Yeah, so Choice Hotels receive a lot of sponsorship inquiries and donation requests from large and small sporting clubs and organisations constantly. So it was a really conscious decision to try and encourage clubs and members and family and friends to stay with Choice whilst providing this commission payment back to clubs. So we wanted to make it grassroots, but at the same time we wanted it to be a national campaign so that all clubs can benefit.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's that real struggle of getting it out there to all the people possible who are thinking about booking accommodation to do so with Choice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess just from a club perspective, when clubs take a minute just to think about just some of the direct accommodation costs that they do have, like just about all clubs, whether they be official or unofficial, have some sort of end-of-season getaway. Many clubs are travelling to tournaments around the state and around the country. And just by utilising the choice program, that can A, create some significant discounts and make it cheaper for attending those events, but B, generate actually quite a lot of revenue coming back to the club, which they just wouldn't normally have access to at all.
That's right. Yeah, we're finding a lot of clubs are now booking their entire year's worth of travel, which might only be, you know, a handful of trips, but if you times that by 20 rooms...
Yeah.
That adds up to be quite a few $1,000s, and if you look into the commission behind that ends up being quite substantial.
Yeah, absolutely. It won't take long for the Choice Sports program to be one of the major sponsors of the club just by continually using it and continually getting your members and supporters to use it on their travels, in even whether it's for work or private or for the sporting events.
You know, we have a lot of clubs who earn a big portion of their commission through personal use. So over the January period, there was a lot of people getting away to the Gold Coast and that sort of thing. So we saw a huge spike in Choice Sports rebates over that period of time because it was personal use. So that was great.
And coming up to Easter, I guess now, well, the long weekend in March for Victorian clubs, and Easter around the country is a traditional getaway time. So it's a really ideal time for clubs to promote the program to their members and get that revenue that they wouldn't normally get.
Exactly.
Now the sports community website has a whole lot of information about the Choice Sports program, and it's got case studies with Little Athletics and a number of different videos to give you a whole lot more information. So if you wanted more information about Choice Sports, you could go to the sports community website, look under current or new news, or go under the fundraising page, or just register your club directly under the Choice Sports website. Laura, which can you just tell our listeners what that is?
Yeah, so that's sports.choicehotel.com.au, and there's also a New Zealand version as well.
Yes.
choicehotels.co.nz. So there's the two domains, and that's where clubs can register for free. So all they need is all their club's details for commission purposes, ABN, etc.
Yes.
And the requests are usually processed within a week or so. Once we have all those details, we get the unique ID and send it direct to the club, and then work with the club on how to promote that.
And fantastic. And if you wanted to make any inquiry about the Choice Sports Hotel, you can just email us at jointheshow@sportscommunity.com.au. And Laura, thank you very much for spending a couple of minutes with us to tell the clubs about our fantastic partnership, but more importantly about the fantastic opportunity you've created for clubs to raise money very, very easily and simply just through their own communications in their own audiences. So thank you very much for your time.
Thanks so much, Steve. It's been great. We've had really positive feedback with our association with sports community, so we're really happy and looking forward to growing it this year even more.
We're very, very proud to be associated with the Choice Sports program because it's genuinely a fantastic service to the clubs, and we commend you for it. So thank you very much, and we'll continue to tell as many people as we can about the program.
Thanks so much, guys.
Okay, last week we talked about all the things that you need to do for your AGMs. We presented everyone with a top 9 things to consider for your club AGMs. This week we're going to present you with the top 9 things to consider when you're thinking about becoming the club president, Steve.
Yes, it's always very flattering, Joe, to be asked, would you like to be the president of the club? And it's not... Many people don't take the time to consider what that actually means until they've got the job, and in one regard, it's too late. I think, and it doesn't matter what club what sport, how big your club is or how little your club is. I think the very first thing that you need to understand when you're considering being a club president is it's now, club presidency is now a 24/7 job, 365 days of the year, Joe. It's there's no off season, and there's no time that your club won't be calling on you for your services.
Absolutely. So, you know, someone comes up and says, can you be club president or something like that? And then, you know, chest goes out, the feathers get fluffed and you're really proud of yourself and it all feels good. And I'm sure there's hundreds of people out there that have experienced these emotions, being asked by their peers to lead the club, and then reality hits. And the first part of that reality is, as you've mentioned, the impact of the role on your family.
Yeah, the number one thing we have in this list, Joe, of our top nine things to consider when you're being club president or being asked to be club president is, what's the impact going to be on your family? So we would strongly recommend that you sit down and talk with your partner, your wife, your husband, and your kids and say, look, I'm considering being the club president. That's going to mean I'm going to be at the club a lot. And that's going to mean I'm going to be taking phone calls in our family time and that sort of stuff. Now, there's two choices, two ways the family can respond, well, positively anyway. They can say, yeah, good luck to you. We support you, but we really don't want to be involved. And that's fine as long as they understand the magnitude of the time that's going to be taken up. Or they can be from that position, alrighty, we're all in. We're all in as a family. How can we support you? What can we do? And that doesn't necessarily mean that the wives are now automatically the canteen manager, Joe, which so often happens that the husbands are president and the wives are the canteen manager or vice versa. That's not what we're talking about here.
But it's important not to sugarcoat it either. When you're sitting down with your family and you're telling them that you're seriously considering taking on this role, you owe it to them to explain exactly what that means. And I think a lot of club presidents make the mistake of sitting down and either telling them or not seeking feedback and also just saying, oh, look, I'm going to be the president of the club. It's just going to mean I'm going to be down there a little bit. But
a few meetings,
you know. And then the shock reality hits when, as you mentioned, it's now 24/7 role and you're getting phone calls at 11 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock at night, beg your pardon, because someone's lost the key and can't lock up or you need, or someone's calling you at 6 o'clock in the morning because they need to get the line markers out of the shed or something along those lines. I mean, these are all things that you need to talk about with your family because it certainly will happen.
Oh, absolutely. And that leads us into point number two, Joe, about, you know, this day and age, you've almost got to consider your employment situation as well and really involve your employer because your phone is going to ring during the day. You cannot control that. It will be ringing during the day. There will be times where you're going to be called upon to duck down the club, as you say, to open up to get tradies in, get line markers out, those sorts of things. So it's only fair to have that discussion with your boss and get their opinions. But on the other side of the coin, Joe, lots of presidents that we see are self-employed and many don't understand the huge amount of time that the club is going to suck out from their working time. And so it's really important to decide, if you're self-employed, how much time are you going to give to your to the club?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you see so many, and that's the reason possibly why you see so many club presidents that are retired or have got businesses that are pretty much running by themselves because they're the only ones that can really spare the time. But you're absolutely right. And in some cases, employers will be very understanding. In fact, often they promote people getting involved in their grassroots sports clubs. So as long as you're open and you're honest with your employer and you tell them that you're putting up your hand to do this for your club, then at least when you are getting your 25 phone calls a day, there's some level of understanding there.
Well, absolutely, and that's what needs to have that understanding at both sides. But first of all, the person who's thinking about applying for president needs to understand that that there's going to be that demand, and it's not just going to be about opening the club rooms. You're going to end up being a counsellor and a motivator and a support, which are all fantastic fantastic things. And I guess that leads on to our third point, Joe, is you really need to understand your own motivations of why you would take on the role.
There's
so many different reasons about why you would do it. You know, you want to contribute to the community. It's your turn to step up to the plate. It may be good, makes you feel good from your own, you know, ego and your own self-esteem. And that's all fine, but you really need to understand that.
Yes, but I would strongly advise anyone out there who's doing club president role just because they feel that it is going to be looking good for them in terms of the community, not to do it, because that's the quickest way to fail. If you're doing it from an ego perspective, you're going to fail. There's no doubt about it.
Well, you're going to have a reality check pretty quickly. you're going to the burdens of the job, and when the ladies run out of toilet paper, they're going to come to the president and say, "We don't have any toilet paper," and that reality hits pretty quickly.
I think what people need to understand when they're going for these roles, and you and I have been in these roles before, is that when you decide to be club president, you are giving up time or you're giving up money. In some cases, you might be giving up both.
Mm.
But the reality is as brutal as that. So you're giving up time or you're giving up money. You're giving up time with your family or time to do other things, or you're giving up money because up till now, nearly all the club president roles that are out there in grassroots sports land are voluntary. There are club presidents that do get paid for the privilege, but most of the clubs we're talking to have got voluntary club presidents. So you're not getting paid for that.
No, that's right.
So that is what you need to consider as point number three, understand your own motives, because if your motives aren't right, you're going to get pretty disenfranchised with that role as soon as you understand the fact that you could be elsewhere doing other things.
Well, and that's where number four comes in very quickly, Joe, is what are your objectives? What are you trying to? What do you want to achieve as president? When you finish your term as president, how are you going to look back and decide whether you were successful or not successful? And this is really important. And we spend a whole 3-hour training session, Joe, on the importance of setting club objectives and then how to go about achieving them. But it's so in a very simple format, it's so important to set club objectives, because what it does is it focuses everybody's attention. Everybody knows what you're trying to achieve, whether it be as a committee or as a club, and it focuses them and it stops people doing what we call noble causes, things that are good to do and honourable to do, but not really helping the club achieve their objectives. So, but a lot of clubs don't set those objectives, and a lot of presidents don't set those objectives. So at the end of the year, you look back and you go, well, did we leave the club better off than we started? And at the end of the day, that's what you are as a president. You're a custodian of the club, and your ultimate goal has got to be to leave the club in a better position than what you inherited for it. So setting your objectives is just vitally important.
I think that is really key. And one of the classic mistakes that club presidents make is that they assume that they're just going along for the ride. And I've seen this many, many times before, and I'd be interested to hear feedback from the club presidents out there. Join the show at sportscommunity.com.au is our email address. But many club presidents just go along for the ride. They get tapped on the shoulder. They're kind of guilted into it because nobody else is putting their hand up to do it. So they think to themselves, oh, look, I'll do it. And because no one else is doing it, and everything will be all right. But what they don't realise is as soon as it's publicised that you are the club president, then you are judged. You're judged not only by your peers and the people in the committee, but you're judged by everyone that's a member of that club. Whether you like it or not, you are now held up for scrutiny. And you may have thought to yourself, well, I'm just going out and going along for the ride. I'm going to help the club. But you're going to get an awful shock when people start coming to you and telling you how to do your job.
Yeah, it's that's one of the common themes with volunteers, but office holders, presidents, secretaries, treasurers, vice presidents, is that it's a very lonely job because people are very fast to give their opinions and to, you know, sometimes in some instances criticize, not so fast to stick their hand up to help. So that leads in beautifully, Joe, to the next one, which is who is going to be on your team? Like today, even in the smallest clubs, it's it's impossible to have one person do all the work. Two people do all the work.
Yeah, just going back to that the judgmental side of things, as you did mention with point number four, what are your objectives? The only way to stop people from being that judgmental is to make sure that as soon as you're nominated as club president is to have a strategic plan and your club goals and objectives set out, because that way your committee and the members of your club will see you as being proactive, as actually being a leader of the club and steering the club, as opposed to just being along for the ride.
Yeah, and hopefully, in many clubs, Joe, they inherit the objectives and are just finishing the journey or continuing the journey. It doesn't mean that you have to rewrite the book and rewrite the objectives. It just means you just quickly focus and embrace those objectives
and communicate them,
get the buy-in.
Right, you're with Joe and Steve here on sportscommunityradio.com.au. I beg your pardon, you're on Sports Community Radio, and our website is sportscommunity.com.au. We're talking top nine things you need to consider if you're thinking about becoming the club president. And number five is who is going to be on your team, as you mentioned before, Steve. And that's a really key and critical decision.
Well, your team is going to define whether you achieve your objectives or not. There is no other way of putting it. The selection of your team, and I'm not just talking about committee, Joe. I'm talking about how are you going to engage your club to help you and your committee achieve its goals. You know, who's on board and that culture of volunteering. But first of all, you need to make sure that you've got a core group of decision makers, which is your committee, and so you need to have those in place and they really need to believe in you and your vision for the club and your objectives that you have for the club or that you wish to continue on the delivery of. So the selection of your team, the single biggest realization that is the president's got to get to is they cannot do everything themselves. Back in the old days, in times gone by, one or two people could do the majority of the work within clubs, but that's just not the case anymore. So the bigger and stronger your team, and this is, I guess, where we have a quite a controversial saying in our training session that becomes quite confronting to some volunteers. It's not the committee's job to run the club. It's the committee's job to ensure the club is run. So ideally, the more people you have in your team undertaking all those tasks, the better chance you have of delivering the on your objectives. And then the role of the president becomes more of a coordinator rather than a doer and making sure that everyone's doing so. So that's really important.
Yeah, and the other point is too, don't select your team members just because they're good people.
Yeah.
It's because they're your mates.
Yeah.
Look, mate, I'll do the sponsorship role.
Yeah, it's very much looking at skill sets these days.
Yeah.
You know, like... You know, every club should be using social media. So you've got to understand Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, websites, those sorts of things. Well, we've pretty much just described every 15-year-old kid now, Joe. So so you look well beyond your committee. And I guess that leads into what sort of president? What's your presidential style? Is it going to be an all-embracing style or is it going to be dictatorial? And you know what? I see the stronger clubs, the clubs that actually deliver, their presidents have a tendency towards what I like to call consultative dictations. You know, like, so they're strong leaders. Once the decision's made about which way to go, then they will bring people along. But while they're making the decision about what's to be done, it's a very consultative process. But once those decisions are made, very focused, very driven, very motivational sort of leaders. And people in sport at the moment, Eddie Maguire in Aussie rules football at Collingwood and Russell Crowe at South Sydney Rabbitohs and now Gerry Ryan as president of Cycling Australia, just a three people that spring to mind in very different sports that have that really strong leadership style. And I think at the end of the day, that's really important.
Well, that's right. I mean, we have a saying, delegate, don't suffocate. And if you're... if you're trying to do, if you're the type of president that's trying to do everything by themselves because you want to maintain control, and there's a lot of presidents like that out there, then you are likely to burn out very, very quickly if the club expands, and you're going to be very negative because of the experience. So the trick with this is you can either be too consultative or you can be too dictatorial. So if you're too consultative, then you're going to spend too much time worrying about the ifs and what other people think and all those kind of things, and you're never going to make any decisions. If you're too dictatorial, you don't take anyone's feedback on board and you make a wrong decision.
Well, you lose them on the journey, don't
you? You're going to lose them on the journey. Yeah. So as you mentioned before, the trick for presidents is to strike a balance between the two. And one of the best pieces of advice I ever got when I got into being a club officer was to make sure that you had three things that you wanted to achieve and to make sure that you achieve them. For a lot of club presidents out there, that might help in the way that they run their club if they focus their thoughts around achievement and not trying to do too much, but by the same token, not trying to be too dictatorial.
Now, speaking of how you run the club, Joe, that leads beautifully into number seven, which is a very mechanical and nuts and bolts consideration, but take the time to read your club rules. The club rules, yes, they're legislatively required, but they tell you how your club is to run, how meetings are to run, how much notice, members' qualifications, obligations, responsibilities of the committee. That everything that you need to know about how to run the club from a process and procedure point are in your club rules. And so you need to make sure that from the day one that you run your club as per club rules, because trust me, if you don't know your club rules, there will be members out there that do, and they will pull you up very quickly, which is just needless waste of time. So take the time at the start of your presidency or before just to read the club rules and be very aware of the club rules and how you're going to administer your club, because it sounds mundane and boring, but it is the source of so much angst and anxiety that we see in real life when conflict amongst members happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see it all the time. You see a bunch of members from a club, you know, railroad the president into a corner and say, such and such has been doing such and such, kick him out of the club. And the president's like, well, I don't know if I can do that. And then people are like, well, you're the president. You should know if you could do that. Or it might not be that as aggressive as that, but it may be other points where the president's pulled up. It's always good to know the rules. It might be also opportune at this point in time to say it's not all doom and gloom, because Steve and I have been talking about the things you should know to be a club president, but there's also a lot of positive that comes out of taking a leadership role. So by no means are we trying to discourage you out there. The grassroots clubs need strong leaders. They need great club presidents. So we don't want you discouraged. All we want to do is prepare you for the journey.
Well, and that leads in, Joe, as you've done so beautifully, to number eight. And that is,
are you ready to inspire?
Well, it's such an amazing opportunity to be a club president. You know, it is such an honor to be that leader within the community. And some people don't realize so early enough in their presidency that everyone's looking to them for leadership. And leadership doesn't need to be grand statements and grand actions and grand deeds. It just needs to be very clear, concise, consistent behavior about what you want your club to be and how you want your club to be. But it's such an amazing, when we speak to people about why they become presidents, often it's because they are inspired to be presidents from people from their past. And so that's you, whether you like it or not, as a club president, you're a role model within your community. You are looked upon, and so that's really, really exciting for some people, but for some others, it takes a little bit of time to understand. So that's number eight. And number nine, Joe, is something that people laugh at us when we tell them. But number nine is the day that you become president, you should be looking to who is going to be your next replacement, because it is such an important role within the club. And if you don't identify and develop and nurture the next president, well, there's only two alternatives, Joe. You continue to be the president, or if you stand down as president and no one steps up to that role, the club's finished. So we say, and quite seriously, we say the greatest recruit that a president will make at your club is their next president.
Absolutely.
And so there's our top nine things to consider when you're thinking about presidency. And yeah, Joe, you're 100% right. We've come at it from a little bit of a negative perspective because we wanted to open up your eyes. But we could have done the top nine benefits of being a club president, which would far outweigh the negatives of.
And we may just do that. So keep an eye on our website, sportscommunity.com.au, for some videos, including club presidents and their feedback on their roles. Just a quick recap on that top nine things to consider when you're thinking of becoming a president: the impact of the role on your family, number one; impact on your employer, two; understand your own motives, three; what are your objectives, four; who is going to be in your team, five; what sort of president are you going to be, six; club rules and responsibilities, seven; know them, that is; are you ready to inspire, number eight; and have you got a succession plan in place, number nine. Okay, we've come to that time again where we're coming to the close of the show. We'd like to extend to you a big hearty thank you for listening to us on this Saturday morning. So from me, Joe Novella.
And me, Steve Pellis, thank you for making us part of your sports community.